This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're in the sweet spot, baby. You're in the sweet spot, girl. You're in the sweet spot, darling. It's a magical kingdom in a mixed up world. You're in the sweet spot, baby. You're in the sweet spot, girl. You're in the sweet spot, darling. It's a magical kingdom in a mixed up world.
Welcome to the Sweep Spot Podcast. My name is Lynn, your host, and Ken is my co-host. Ken, how's it going?
Oh, Lynn, it is going. I am looking forward to this episode of the Sweep Spot Podcast.
This is episode 378.
What? 378?
Yep.
Oh, wow. I that's impressive, Lynn. That's hard to believe.
Yeah. We're not going backwards. We're moving forward.
All right.
Yeah.
That's the spirit.
Well, if you're wondering who these guys are, Ken and I are both former Disneyland custodial cast members, and we host the number one Disneyland podcast hosted by two former Disneyland custodial cast members.
Number one.
Yes, we are also authors of the books Cleaning the Kingdom. We have two different volumes. You can get both of them on paperback from Amazon. And you can also get the second book from our website, autographed by both of us at thesweepspot.com. The first book is sold out on our website, but you can get it on Amazon and also digital copies, wherever those are, like Kindle and whatever the Apple one is. I can't remember. And Apple Books or something like that. And also you can get the audiobooks versions wherever those are found, Audible and whatnot. We also have a Patreon we wanted to mention. If you'd like to help support the show, we are listener supported and can help support us, and you get some cool perks along with that. You get two perks once a month. You get one bonus episode delivered to you that Ken and I record specifically for the Patreons. It's about 20-30 minute episode once a month. And they also get to join in on our current events live that we record once a month, where you get to interact with other Sweet Spot listeners in the chat room. And then we'll incorporate your some of your comments into our discussion as we record the current events for that week. So you can join our Patreon at the by going to patreon.com and searching the Sweep Spot, or going to thesweepspot.com and look for the Patreon link there. And you can join for $5 or more per month. You get all those perks we just mentioned. If you don't care for the perks, you can just, I mean, we have people that just give a dollar, and that every little bit helps, and we truly appreciate it.
Yeah, it does cost money to have, you know, to produce the podcast and to have our archive. So it does help.
And I feel entertainment wise, it's worth it. So
there you go. It's yes.
Ken, who is our guest tonight?
We have Dori Neal. Mm-hmm. Dori Neal is joining us from, she had been a Disneyland cast member. So we're going to hear about her experiences. And we always love talking with people who were Disneyland cast members or worked somewhere else in the company. And although we were sweepers, we liked talking with people of all different roles that they had at the Disneyland. It gives a great perspective on everything that goes on there. So,
yeah, I mean, as custodians, we worked with all other departments. So it was, you know, whether it be attractions or foods, we worked with them to do cleanups pretty much everywhere. So,
yeah,
it's fun to talk to former cast members for sure. So let's get right into that. Looking to go to Disneyland Resort in California, Walt Disney World Resort in Florida, Aulani in Hawaii, or on a Disney cruise, or Adventures by Disney Vacation, I am here to help you book the best vacation possible, and my expertise and services won't cost you anything extra. Disney pays me, not you. As a perk by booking a package with me, I can also book your dining reservations, park reservations, tours, shuttles, and more. Let me do the hard work while you get excited about your upcoming Disney vacation. I can also book Universal Studios trips as well. By booking with me this year, you will receive 3 months free of our Patreon perk, like our bonus episodes, and join in on our current events live. So contact me at lbarron, that's LBARRON, at concierge.com, that's concierge.com, or thesweepspot@gmail.com.
Hello, boys and girls, and welcome to Storybook Land. Today, we will visit the miniature homes of many of Walt Disney's most beloved storybook characters.
So, Dory, did you grow up going to Disneyland? Was that something you did as a child?
Yeah, I did. I grew up in Garden Grove, and I grew up in the Wonder Years days, and where all the kids just, you know, played together all around the whole neighborhood, and everybody's mom would feed us, and, you know, everybody's dad would make sure we were safe and so on. And so I remember so vividly in the summer times, knowing when we needed to go home, when when the Disneyland fireworks would start. And I believe it was just right around 9 o'clock, maybe just a little bit after. And we would, my neighborhood friends and my brother and I, we would climb up on our garage roof and watch the fireworks from the roof of our house, if you can believe that. And I'm not sure my mom even knows that we did that, but we did. Yeah. And we, you know, went to Disneyland, of course, whenever family came to visit. And we always had the shoebox full of the old ticket books with extra tickets. Yeah. And I still have a whole huge box of old tickets from Disneyland and also from Knott's Berry Farm.
Yeah.
And none of them have an admission page on them, unfortunately.
Yeah.
but you know, that was when we went to Disneyland. That was a special thing. And we always had plenty of tickets for every possible ride we could go on. And I remember so vividly as a child, my mom showing me the newspaper headlines of Small World getting ready to open and Haunted Mansion getting ready to open and Pirates. And, you know, those rides were not even there when I was a kid. And they were such big deals. And there would be articles in the Orange County Register with big, you know, color pictures of, you know, the ride and the planning and the Imagineers and such. So yeah, it was a big part. I grew up probably 15 minutes at the most from Disneyland.
Yeah.
I mean, Catella, right off of Catella. So,
right.
Yeah.
So when did you go to hire in, like, when did you go to apply at Disneyland, and why do you think you did that?
Okay. Well, I applied, I graduated at 17, and I thought I had heard that you had to be 18 to apply. And so I waited till my 18th birthday, just graduated from high school, just started college, was going to Cal State Fullerton. And I, the summer before my 18th birthday, I actually got a job at Knott's Berry Farm because my then boyfriend at the time, who's now my husband of 46 years, he was working there at the mine ride. And so I got a job working in food services at Knott's Berry Farm, and it was very unglamorous.
Yeah.
And I had applied at the same time for Disneyland. And I think I worked maybe a month or two at Knott's, and then I got the call from Disney to come and interview. Mm-hmm. And I was so happy that I was able to get out of food services at Knott's Berry Farm. And I got hired at Disneyland for Main Gate. And I remember going to the interview. I think it was just a one-on-one interview, so I can remember right. Mm-hmm. And I kind of remember being offered the position like right away and started training as a seasonal employee because I was in college. And I got put at Main Gate as a ticket taker. And it was a great place to start out at Disneyland. I loved working at the Main Gate. I was thinking some of my best things about being there were just the coworkers.
Yeah.
We had just fun and people got along, and it just seemed like it was always pretty busy, you know? So the time always went really, really fast. And
about what year was that? Just to kind of get
that was in 1976, approximately. Okay. Oh. I graduated from high school in 75, and I know, like I said, I had to wait till my 18th birthday to apply in October. Mm-hmm. So somewhere around the fall of 75 is when I started, 76. And so I was able to be a part of the parade crowd control for the Bicentennial Parade in 1976. And I was so thrilled because, you know, that was a very exciting summer, that summer of 76, and with the bicentennial, and you know, everything at Disney was all about red, white, and blue. And was it Sam was the mascot, the little eagle?
Oh yeah.
And,
yeah,
right. The parade characters were those funny ones with the real big heads.
Yeah,
they were kind of odd looking, but yet the music was so catchy. And I really enjoyed doing crowd control at the parades. And I was going to school to become an elementary school teacher. And so that was just right up my alley, is, you know, getting the crowd excited before the parade started. And, you know, the characters, making sure they would, you know, you kind of get to know the regulars in the parades when you do that. And they would always, I think, kind of look for me too, because I made the crowd excited and engaged as well. And I remember, you know, they had their special little wave for me. So I would tell all the little kids around me to look for these characters and wave at them. And so that was just a really fun time. So that was my beginning.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's when you had mentioned the year, I thought, wow, that's the first thing I thought of was the Bicentennial. And then the America Sings opened that in 74. Like, it had opened just before that. But
Yeah.
Really neat.
Yeah, so American Sings was, I think, 74, and but it was in anticipation of the Bicentennial.
So that was a fun summer, and you know, being a ticket taker, you know, it was so different with the ticket books. You know, you had to put on you learn how to get a rubber thumb on your hand, and you could flip through like you were dealing a deck of cards to snap off that top cover sheet, which was the admission ticket. And you know, the guests would come up with a stack of ticket books for their family, and you know, if they were brand new books, and you learned how to like flip through like you're shuffling cards and snap that top ticket off really quickly. I just remember learning how to do that, and like, you know, your rubber thumbs were your best friends, and of course you didn't want to lick your fingers to do it, but
I forgot about how that worked. I know I remember the ticket books and using them as a child, but I just, you know, I probably wasn't the one handling the admission
part. I had some really wonderful supervisors at the main gate. And one I just got back in touch with through the Facebook group. And it was so nice to catch up with her, because I had actually, when I was like 15, I just barely, you know, just got my driver's license. I was cleaning apartments for little old ladies in Garden Grove for $2 an hour before I could get like a real job. And I had been I had helped her grandmother out, and she and her grandmother, many years later, had come to my wedding. And so it was just so neat to reconnect. And she was just saying, she remembered me working with her at the main gate and going to my wedding and how much her grandma loved me. And it was like, that was a memory I had forgotten about. And as soon as she said it, I was just like, oh my goodness. Yes. It like opened up a whole box of neat, really happy memories, a happy time.
I think working at the main gate is fun also because the guests at that time of the morning, they're all excited to get in. They're in a good mood. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And, of course, the lines would get a little bit long, but nothing like they would be nowadays, of course. But
yeah,
that's a good point. And then, I also enjoyed the closing shifts and working at night. You'd start to shut down the entrances as the hours wore on into the evening. And then pretty soon you're just opening. You just had the exit open and people would want their hands stamped and you would give them the hand stamp with the fluorescent glow in the dark, Mickey and Goofy and Donald and Minnie. And so there was a different hand stamp. And so there was a little station at the main gate where you'd put your hand underneath the fluorescent light, or the guests would put their hand under the fluorescent light to see if it was a real stamp or not. And I remember one of the tricks was somebody would exit and then they would give their roll someone else's back of their hand on top of their stamp to try to cheat and get back in. That's what some of the locals would do.
Yeah, yeah.
Where they could get in free. And so they would come and stick their hand underneath the fluorescent light, but it would be backwards. And so you always knew, no, you're cheating. So you had to be wary about certain things like that.
That's funny. I forgot about that. I remember the stamp, but I forgot that people had done that. Yeah.
Sometimes people did silly things.
Yeah.
And one of my bad memories of working at the main gate was people would try to sneak in. And sometimes there would be a big, large group of people. And usually security would call over on the radio to the supervisor and say, man, we got this group. They're looking suspicious. Right. And so we were kind of prepared, and maybe would shut down some of the turnstiles and because they were just a little mechanical lock you would turn on the turnstiles. And then there was I think it was a turquoise colored iron gate that would close behind them. Mm-hmm. And but sometimes they would just charge the gates and jump over the turnstiles. I remember one time that happened to me when I was working. And I put my arm out to lock the turnstile because I saw him coming. Yeah. And this kid jumped up and bit my arm. Whoa. And it's like, okay, I don't care. I don't want to get bit. That was one of I have a few bad memories. That was one of them, but it was kind of funny now that I'm thinking about it.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
You probably saw a lot of 2-year-olds that were highly developed, right?
I did. And you'd asked me about celebrity sightings and there was a celebrity and I'm toying with whether or not I don't want her to turn and sue me. Barbara Eden, I Dream of Jeannie, came through my turnstile and she had an adult, ticket book for herself and a child's for her son, who was obviously about 16 or 13 or something. He was a teenager. And I, very nicely said, so sorry, but they gave you the wrong book. Your son looks like he's not under, I forgot the age limit, but it wasn't very 10, maybe.
I think it used to be 12 and then they lowered 12, it to 10.
He was much, much older than 12. And he was not very happy with me. And remember, this is back in the days of ticket books where you had to give a ticket for every single ride.
Yeah.
And so I just explained, you're going to have trouble all day long and I don't want you to have a bad day. And she said, well, they gave me these tickets over there at guest relations. And I said, I am so sorry, but they must have just handed you the wrong one. And you're just going to have a much happier day if you would get this fixed right now, because you're going to have trouble all day with these trial tickets.
Yeah.
And so I sent her back to go get a junior book, which they sold at the time. And so anyway, she was not happy with me, but I tried to be as, helpful and polite as I could.
Yeah.
Yeah. It used to be they had 3 tiers, right? They had kids, which was 3 to 12. And they had juniors. They had juniors. So it was like 13 to 18 or whatever, you know, 13, 17 or whatever.
Yes.
But now there's just two tiers, and then they lowered it from, they lowered kids from 12 to 10. So,
Yeah. So that was my worst celebrity encounter. I do remember getting, you know, gosh, I'm so sorry. I'm 66 and I've kind of forgotten a lot of this, but
that's fine.
So I remember the Beatles, the various Beatles came through at different times over the years, but it was never through a turnstile that I was close enough to really get a good look or, you know, a smile or anything. But I know the Beatles did come a number of times over the years, the different members.
Yeah.
So that was kind of exciting.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I'm trying to think what else was going on at that time. Yeah. The Bicentennial was a huge deal. That parade was, was a big deal.
Yeah. And well, and then later years, I can't remember if it was the very next year, but the electrical parade was out at night or at in the summertime at night. And then, of course, the different holiday parades. But I really enjoyed the electrical parade, too. And, you know, again, it's got those earworm songs that get stuck in your head.
I know.
But boy, I hear that music, you know, now every once in a while you'll catch a little bit of the electrical parade music, main theme music. And it's like it really brings back happy memories. I enjoyed that parade a lot. And it was just so with the little bugs that were lit up and different characters that were lit up. Everything was just extra lit up. And I kind of wish they'd bring that parade back because it was very exciting to see the electrical parade in person.
Yeah, for sure. I remember that too. So as a cast member, we were always allowed to, you know, visit the park when we weren't working. Mm-hmm. I assume you did that with friends and family.
I did. Yeah. I was there seasonally and then, I ended up transferring to Fantasyland a couple of years into my time there. And I was able to get on as a permanent part-time and, you know, kind of work my way up through the levels as at C is the lowest, or it was back then, I think. And I think I worked my way up to a B, and it had to do with the number of hours you were able to get to work.
Right.
And so as a permanent part-time B, I was able to sign in, I think, 4 people a day. It was very generous.
Yeah.
And so, of course, my husband worked at Knott's Berry Farm. I was also going to Cal State Fullerton. And so he could sign us into Knott's, and then I could sign us into Disneyland when we were going out before we got married. And so, you know, and he lived in Fullerton. I lived in Garden Grove still at home. And so, yeah, we went a lot. And you know, it was nice to be able to go like in the evenings and the summertime when it was a little bit cooler and not as crowded. And so, yeah, it was a wonderful benefit. And I don't think it's nearly as generous now as it used to be, but that was an awesome, awesome thing. And then I could get tickets. There was a window for cast members to buy ticket books. Backstage, kind of near where the costume pickup windows were. I remember there was there was a place back there somewhere by the locker room sort of, and you could go and buy books greatly discounted. So say you had family coming in to visit from out of state and you needed to buy, you know, five ticket books, you could do that. And they were, I want to say maybe half price. They were very discounted. So it seemed like as an employee, that was a great benefit to be able to, you know, and help my family be able to go and rides and have lots and lots of tickets and, you know, have a good day and a little bit of a break on the price.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I know that we definitely took advantage of some of that. So you said that. Yeah, for sure. You said you moved to attractions. Was that during your first, because you had said that you had worked there like two different.
Yeah, I worked there from 1976 to about 79. I got my first teaching job out in Lake Elsinore. So it was a bit of a drive, you know, about an hour drive. And I continued, but once I got my first teaching job, it was too long of a drive to be able to continue. Yeah. So I did leave Disney on good terms. And I ended up going back in, I think it was around 1983. And I was there for another year or two, maybe. And mm-hmm. I ended up, so I was in Fantasyland at first as a ride operator. And then when I came back later, I was in Tomorrowland as a ride operator. Oh. And so, yeah, I worked on quite a few of the different rides, and I really wanted to go back to Fantasyland. I kind of fit the look they, I guess yeah. they had, you know, of Fantasyland. I was on Storybook, and mm-hmm. I really would have rather have gone back to Fantasyland. I did not care for Autopia. It was a hard ride for me. Yeah. I think I have two left feet, and on Autopia, you have to jump on this little pedal thing on, or at least at the time, on the outside of the cars. So as the guests were coming back around to exit, you know, to end their drive.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
The ride operator would have to jump on the car, and they called it jump in the cars, and you land on this little pedal that gave you control then of the car. It was like an exterior gas pedal, so I think. And mm-hmm. then you could grab the wheel, jump on this thing, grab the wheel, and then you can, you know, put the brake on and whatnot. I could not do that. I spent a whole summer with the most horrible bruises on my shins because I could not figure out how to do that. And there was a right side and a left side of the ride. And so some of the cars you had to jump on the right, some of the cars you had to jump on the left, you know, and grab that wheel. And so I finally did learn it, but boy, it took me a long time. And I was just black and blue. I just could not figure out how to do that. But and then another bad thing about Autopia is you have to gas up the cars after closing. And oh my gosh, the gasoline smell was just like you would leave and you would just feel like you were drenched in the fumes of gasoline. But but I did, other than that, it was a pretty fun ride.
Yeah. But you said you worked at in Fantasyland was, and mm-hmm. I know that Fantasyland went through a whole refurbishment and mm-hmm. during that time. Were you there after it had reopened or before
you
that?
No, I believe I was there in Fantasyland during before that because uh-huh. I remember I worked on, I did Storybook, and that was definitely exactly the same right. since it had been from time immemorial. And then I worked on Teacups and Toad, and that mm-hmm. had not been redone yet. And then Snow White and Carousel. And Snow White had those very heavy old cars. And so, you know, as, you know, the controlling person as the ride was leaving or coming back in, mm-hmm. you know, you had like a control panel where you would take control of the vehicles. And those cars were so heavy, and it took forever for them to slow down enough to stop them. So that was kind of a hard ride for me.
Yeah.
But I love Carousel. That was my very favorite ride. And for some reason, as klutzy as I am, like I was saying earlier on Autopia, I could jump on and off that carousel like nobody's business. And you grab a pole, you start running and you jump on, or you grab the pole, you jump off and start, you know, you run and jump off at the same time. Mm-hmm. But I could somehow figure that one out. And that one was the most fun. I love Storybook too, but Carousel was just like, man, I felt really coordinated when I could do that. And people would get off the carousel with these huge grins. You know, mm-hmm. of course, there's a lot of little teeny kids that go on carousel.
Yeah.
And they would get off, go get back in line, and within one more cycle, they would be back on that horse and going again. And I just remember people doing that a lot.
Yeah.
And it's just, that was fun. And the music was wonderful. I love antiques and vintage things anyway. Mm-hmm. And that carousel was just such a work of art had been so lovingly restored. And, you know, the music was wonderful and just everything. It just was this old fashioned, beautiful thing. And it just brought so much joy to people. And it was just a really fun ride to work.
That's true. I do think of the carousel that way. Yeah, exactly. Everything you said, it's just, how could you not smile?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Teacups. I like teacups for the most part, you know, and when I was working there, these were single operator rides. And, you know, in the Fantasyland ride operations hierarchy, they were the beginning rides, the training where you learned, you started on Storybook. Mm-hmm. And then if you were lucky enough to become permanent part-time, you might move up to Teacup's Toad and Snow White Carousel. So I was really proud that I was able to get off of Storybook and not be there forever. But I did like working on Teacups as well. But that music would just drive you insane if you worked there too often. So it was nice when, you know, they had like a, I don't know what they call a rotation, where you work on Teacups and someone would come and bump you, and then you would go over to Toad, and then you'd work on Toad, and then you'd go, you know, someone would come and bump you, and then you would go and take a break or something. Mm-hmm. So I was always so glad when someone came to bump me off onto a break or over to Toad to get that music. And oh, that music was just playing in your head all the way home.
Yeah.
But
you said Storybook, that was like you would do the narration or the spiel for that, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I still have my original script from, you know, 1976 or maybe 77 from Storybook. And it's just like a little treasure I've hung on to my whole life. And I can't say it when I'm awake, but in my sleep, I sometimes still dream about saying the spiel for Storybook. And I, you know, I've always liked antiques. I like miniature things just in general. And so that was right up my alley. I really enjoyed working on Storybook, except for when it was super hot in the summer and we were double loading boats because it was so crowded and busy. Mm. And so you had to kind of rush, you know, a little bit.
Yeah.
But I ended up becoming an elementary school teacher and then later an elementary school principal. And so telling stories was just right up my alley. And so I enjoyed that. I always had a little helper, you know, you load up the boat so that they're full and safe. Mm-hmm. And so if you had one extra, you know, to load, you'd put a child up on the little, I don't know what they call it, on the boats. They had the little, like little house where the ride operator would sit. Mm-hmm. And there was another side where a child could sit. Or sometimes you could put a child like at the very front end of the boat. There was a little area. And so, you know, kids just love to get picked to be that, you know, the special helper. And I would make a big deal about, you want to be my special helper. And it's so funny because, I mean, even when I was working at my elementary school, many, many years later, people would say, I think I remember you from Storybook. We all kind of looked alike. So it probably was not me, Yeah, people remember that ride and they remember how you made them feel. And when you treated their children special and you made it sound like a big adventure and like you were reading them a story.
Yeah.
And that's how I approached it. I mean, I did, and there were times where it was so busy and you're hot and tired and sometimes you zone out a little bit, but for the most part, I really tried to make it special. And because I think Storybook was like maybe a C ticket, maybe. Or B, which is lower on the hierarchy of things back in those days. So, you know, people usually had more of those lower level tickets because the ticket books had more of those in them. And, you know, the E tickets, of course, were Pirates and Haunted Mansion and such. And so, you know, they only got a few of those on their ticket book. So people tended to really go to Storybook and some of those smaller rides. And so, you know, just trying to make it special. But a funny story about Storybook is, I don't know if I'm the only person that ever fell into the canal, but I did fall into the canal. I told you I'm a little clumsy. So I was, you know, on Storybook, of course, there are a lot of people working, you know, employees working to load. And usually it's two cast members helping to load. And there was one person helping and I was loading, had a foot on the dock and a foot on the boat, right? And you just kind of get your sea legs and you learn that the boat moves and rocks kind of up and down a little bit. And as people are getting in and out, then the boat rocks a little more. And darn if I didn't fall right between the boat and the dock. My foot slipped and I fell into the canal up to my waist, but I caught myself. One hand on the dock and one hand on the boat. And so of course I had to go change because I was soaking wet. So that's a funny Storybook story.
More embarrassing than anything. I mean, like, yeah. I would imagine I would feel the same way.
Yeah. It was like one of my claims to fame. And another funny thing about Storybook is I remember periodically, you probably know more about this. It was after hours, they would bring in scuba divers. Mm-hmm. And the scuba divers would come and they would dive in and find all of the things that had fallen into the water, like sunglasses and wallets and keys, and they would clean it.
Disobedient children.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I always thought that was just fascinating. They didn't drain it. They just brought in scuba divers to clean the canal. So, and
imagine what they got paid.
Oh, I know. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
And I think, I don't remember, it was like real early in the morning or later at night, but I just remember the scuba divers a number of times coming and cleaning the canals out. Maybe it was the ride was down for maintenance or something, but that was kind of funny. And then, another thing I always thought was fascinating on Storybook was periodically the plants would get refreshed.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an area there. It was the Storybook quilt made out of succulents.
Yeah.
That is like on a long stretch and it looks like a quilt, but it's made out of little tiny plants, like little small succulents and cactusy kind of things. And I just always thought that was so beautiful. And it would turn different colors, like in the fall,
mm-hmm.
because those plants would change. So I just thought that was really interesting to see the gardeners, how they would come and, you know, update and refresh. And then the tiny little bonsai trees, you know, that had to be trimmed. And there was a lot of gardening that expertise that went into that ride.
Definitely. It's you know, you don't have it at Walt Disney World. I believe they have a version of it at Disneyland Paris.
No.
But, you know, it's not like every park has it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm glad they still have it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. It's good that it still exists. I mean, you know, I can just picture them. I can just picture somebody saying, hey, we could put, you know, some more character meet and greets here if we just take up the storybook.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I didn't like that they took away the guns and the hippos. But, wait, I'm confusing it with something else. Never mind.
Yeah, that would have been something.
I can tell you another funny story is I remember back when I worked there was one employee parking lot and it was right off of Harbor. There was an employee lot entrance and like a little guard shack. And so the employee lot was, you know, it seemed big at the time, but nowadays it would be tiny. And so you would, you know, park and hike your, you know, block or so into the guard shack, and then you would go find your time card,
mm-hmm.
which was a physical time card, and then you would go get your time card, and it was all in alphabetical order, and you would go and actually punch your time card in a time clock. So that was kind of crazy thinking about it nowadays.
Yeah.
And now just, I hired in, they were still doing that.
Was that right?
So that was always fun. You know, find your time card.
Mm-hmm.
Punch it.
Hope it wasn't misplaced by somebody, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
Because it was just open to everybody. Yeah. But there are kitties around, as I'm sure you guys know. And you don't usually see them when you're there working, you know, during the daytime, the regular operating hours. But one time when I went, I was clocking out, and there was a kitten that had been found somewhere near the guard shack. And I was newly married. I didn't even think, I didn't have a cell phone. And so I took the kitten home with me. And he was the best little kitty. And so it's like, yeah, I got my free kitten today at Disneyland. Oh my gosh.
That's funny. A souvenir.
A souvenir.
Well, I love that little kitty. Now you're going to get a letter that it returned Disney property.
Oh gosh. Yeah, that kitty's long gone. But that was like, oh no, we got a kitten. We got kittens today. Would anybody like one? In the garbage
did you ever have to replace its batteries, or did it just They look so realistic. It's just amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you worked in, you said you got moved over to Tomorrowland and you worked in Utopia. Was there any other attractions you worked over there?
I just worked there, and you know, every area has their your beginner ride, so to speak, right, that you learn. And if I had been able to get to a different ride, I might have stayed a little bit longer. But
I had
a problem when I worked on Utopia, and that was I was sexually harassed by a coworker. And back in those days, I didn't know what to do. There had been no training or meetings or employee book handbooks about such things. And so I ended up, and I had my first daughter in 82, and I guess I still had a very shapely figure, and those costumes were kind of tight. And so, this guy kept trying to brush up against me in a not nice way. And so I just kind of ignored it, hoping it would go away, and it didn't. And so I finally confronted him and in those uncertain terms told him to knock it off. And he did. But I ended up deciding I really didn't need that. And that's why I decided it was time for me to not do that crazy drive anymore. And I was working full time as a teacher by that time and had a baby. And so.
Oh, yeah, that's a lot. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that kind of pushed me over the edge. And, I think now, like I was an elementary school principal, I had to go to days long training on this topic, in my regular career later.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that Disney probably has much more firm policies and trainings and such now. But yeah, that was disheartening for me. That was probably the worst thing that happened.
I mean, that's something that we point out is that, Disneyland has all of the workplace issues that you find in offices, as well as, the kind of retail setting, fast food type setting, whatever, it has the issues of all of those, because it's Disneyland doesn't mean it doesn't have those things. So,
that's a good point.
Co-workers that don't like each other. You've got office romances. You've got sexual harassment. I do remember when we did get sexual harassment training finally at Disneyland. I remember that. I'm lucky I didn't get kicked out of there because mine was with Sue Ellen. We were both taking the training together, along with a few other people, and Sue Ellen was a wisecracking lady. So, of course she was cracking jokes left and right, and we're surprised we weren't kicked out.
Oh boy.
Yeah, another funny thing that I was, as I was mentally thinking about interesting things to talk about, the doppelgangers. They were so funny how many times when I was working there, people would stop me and say hi, and they often called me Sandy. And so I would say, I'm not Sandy, but that happened so many times. And I never did get to find out who Sandy was, but apparently, I have a twin named Sandy that worked in Fantasyland at the same time. And I think that, that probably happened to a lot of people, but I think part of it is just because the dress code standards were so strict when I worked there. And the male haircut had to be a certain number of inches off the collar and this and that, and only clear nail polish and only small bead earrings and no jewelry. Makeup had to be very simple. Hairstyles had to be just very clean cut, wholesome, Disney image. And I think maybe that's part of why people still think, like, if they hear I worked at Disneyland, like, I remember you, a storybook. But
I would get, and I think I've mentioned this on the program before, but it's definitely mentioned in our book. I would be working and somebody backstage would come along and say, It just, they would just continue a conversation with me they were having with somebody else. And it turned out it was this guy, he ended up becoming an assistant manager. I was an hourly and he was an assistant manager. So like some people would be like, weren't you just over here in a tie?
Oh,
and
no.
I'm like, no. And it took us a while to figure it out that people were confusing us for each other.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, but we both worked in, cause you know, he came up from custodial busing and then he was a manager, assistant manager. I was an hourly in custodial sweeping. And then we'd have these meetings. One time we're at a meeting and we're standing next to each other. And one of the other supervisors of the meeting's like, don't stand next to each other. But it was weird because people would just be talking to me like, I'm thinking, what the heck are you talking about? You know, it's just like they're continuing a conversation that I had no idea what they were talking about.
And then, yeah. Yes. I know exactly what you feel like.
That poor guy.
do you remember having to work certain holidays? Like, did you ever work New Year's Eve?
Oh, yes. You know, you, when you're picking your schedule, when you first become permanent part-time, you know, you get sort of what's the crumbs left over.
Yeah.
And so, yes, many, many New Year's Eves and holidays and grad nights. And back when I was working there, they had these special parties, you know, private parties where, say, a church group would rent the whole park. And you could, the whole park, the park would be open till 7. They would clear them out, and then the church group would come in at 7. And so a lot of those, and then sometimes they called them mix-ins, mm-hmm. where a special church group would buy tickets, but the regular crowd was still there too. And so, yeah, and then maybe the regular crowd would go longer. I don't know. It was a lot of variations of those special events. And the grad nights were the hardest because you were just exhausted by the time you got off. And that drive home to Lake Elsinore was very long.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I enjoyed working the special events. And I remember as I was, you know, going to clock in at the guard shack and the time clock room, there was often an employee there that had like a big basket of special buttons. Mm-hmm. Like, so, okay, today it's Mickey's birthday or, you know, something. It's a something or other, you know, 50th anniversary. And so they would have pins or maybe even a carnation. I remember getting fresh flowers a lot of times to put somehow with my name badge. That was fun. And I still have quite a few of those things. Mm-hmm. I have a memory box of Disney things from working there. And that was kind of fun too. And being able to say, you know, I was there Christmas Eve or whatever. Yeah. I think Disneyland used to close. It seemed like it was closed one day a year and it was on Christmas Day or something. I can't remember now. But it did actually have like one day a year it closed completely. I don't think it does that anymore. But
no, I know that when Ken was there a few years before I was, but it would close early on Christmas Eve, like 6 o'clock mm-hmm. or something. And then, mm-hmm. yeah, it would reopen on Christmas Day, but yeah, well, now it's just all of them.
And until 1985, they had they would close on the off season. They would close on Mondays or
yes, Tuesdays. Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed the park as an employee, and when I was working there, I would go in with my boyfriend, my fiance at the time, and we would go like in March, and I think it was maybe closed on Mondays, and then we would go on a Tuesday, and it was just like nobody there. Maybe it was a little rainy, a little drizzly, but it wasn't bad. And oh my gosh, that was so much fun to be able to be there when it was that way and not so crowded and hot, and you know, get to go on anything you want to go on as many times as you want.
Yeah, you can't find that now. It's just crowded year round.
Yeah.
Another funny story I can tell you is that when I got married, I was working there still. And so many of my coworkers came to my wedding. And so the bride's side of the church, I got married at Cameo Wedding Chapel in Anaheim. It's not even there anymore. But my side of the church was all full of Disneyland employees. Oh. And then my husband was still working at Knott's Berry Farm, and he had just graduated from college. And so his side of the church was all Knott's Berry Farm employees. And he worked on the mine ride. And so it was all the mine ride employees. And so it was so funny because the man that married us is, his name is Father Era. And he actually had married Hugh Hefner and somebody right before our wedding. Wow. And so he was quite a character, just needless to say. And so he commented about that, how it's half the church is Disneyland and half the church is Knott's Berry Farm. Well, it was kind of funny.
Yeah.
One of my bridesmaids was one of my best friends that I worked with at the main gate.
I'm sure there's many more memories and stories. It's when we started writing our books, I had only been gone from there, I don't know, maybe 8 years or something. And it was hard to remember some of the stories, but then when I started talking with Ken or another someone else I worked with, then they start to come back, you know, like, oh yeah, mm-hmm. I totally forgot about that.
yes, I agree.
I guess we'll definitely have to try to have you back on and talk some more Disneyland for sure, but thank you so much for coming on, Dory.
Oh, it was my pleasure. I've enjoyed thinking about it. And you know, I've been telling my granddaughters who are young adults now about some of my adventures at Disneyland. And, you know, they just think it's so interesting to hear all this back in the olden days, Disneyland.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, thanks again. We really appreciate
it. Oh, well, thank you. It was an honor to be able to chat with you guys.
Okay. Wow. Thank you so much, Dory, for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you. I like getting the insight. And, you know, it's likely that, you know, maybe she loaded me and my friends into a ride vehicle and you know, way back in the day. And, you know, there's always the possibility. Unfortunately, sometimes I record this standing on my head on the other side of the room. So sometimes... You know, so if I sounded different, that's why. I was kind of like hanging upside down.
That's good for your back.
That's right. I have to exercise that out, you know. But we really appreciate that you're listening to the show. Lynn, what closing comments do we have?
None. Thank you. I don't know. Thank you. Really appreciate it. You can get our... you know, you can get all the show notes and all the information. We have t-shirts for sale. I said we have our second book still for sale over there, and links to everything at thesweetspot.com. We always love hearing from you. So you can always send an email to thesweetspot@gmail.com. That's thesweetspot@gmail.com.
We're on Instagram. We have a Facebook group, but Lynn and I are both on Instagram. Him more so than me. Mm-hmm. And also X, formerly known as Twitter, or some of you still call it Twitter, you know, we're there too. But.
And I also wanted to say that if you are a former cast member and you haven't been on the show yet, you know, reach out to me at the sweetspot@gmail.com. We'd like to chat with you and possibly have you on our show to talk about your time at Disneyland. So... that's for Disneyland cast members or whatnot. So, yeah. Anyways, thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. And we'll talk with you next time.